right. I just I want to reiterate what's probably already been said, but it's really great to be standing here and talking about some work and some ideas with this really great group of people. So my talk is kind of framed a little differently, in part because my work, I don't really consider myself a ceramic artist. So, but with that said, a lot of my work has clay in it. So what I potentially bring to the conversation is maybe something decidedly different than what a ceramic artist per se would bring to the conversation about ceramics or clay. Hopefully what that does is it doesn't put what I'm about to say in opposition to a discussion about ceramics. And in part, in organizing my thoughts today and trying to kind of figure out a way to talk about my work through ceramics, what's pretty much happened is that I found it really difficult not to understand my work. I understood my work oppositionally, I should say. So, and I didn't like that so much. I'm going to start showing some images, and what I want to do is just use the images of my work as kind of a backdrop as I talk about some of the reasons why I think about how I think about clay and what I'm trying to do with the work. So, how does this work? Oh, we want to do this though. There we go. That's what you want. Okay, great. I've always been interested and somewhat terrified at how clay, before we touch it, doesn't have scale. It no doubt has size and mass, but not really scale. Its plasticity in relation to our bodies is always undetermined and ghost-like. Scale is something nearly universally present, yet here, within an ocean of cultural production, is still a thing that doesn't possess scale inherently. It doesn't grow into anything like a tree or a flower or a polar bear or anything that we need or make or consume, like an iPod or a pair of jeans. It's also not fixed like a rock is or a brick is. It's just lumpen possibility. It's scaleless matter. For me, this issue with scale is important. I'm always slightly startled and slightly terrified the moment I put clay in my work. It immediately causes a rift. It's as if a rogue element entered the composition and decentered the gravity of the space. It disrupts the stability of things while speaking to a more disorganized, complex compositional structure, the sly, harmonious order of entropy. Intellectually, its presence incites and urges to be reconciled with. But there's also something about clay's posture and its lumpen wet state that's a little sad. It seems to fail in its own base and drunk materiality. But lately I've begun to understand failure and success as living in close proximity to one another. When you have these two opposing forces occupying nearly the same psychic space, the small gap between them becomes an extreme location. I like to imagine the work trying to negotiate this charged space, where it has to strain to keep everything together. But this stress also forces the work to cultivate its own inner logic, its own bizarrely syncopated cadence. It's no secret, clay is ancient. It races through a continuum linking us to the other side of 10,000 years of making and 6 billion years of geological time. Yet when it's inside the work, its presence is always out of time. It's neither old nor young, modern nor nostalgic. It just sits there measuring like a tool or a mystical gauge. It's been written that one can measure a culture or a society's level of sophistication and modernization by looking at what their ceramics looks like. I agree, yet this proposition becomes a bit thorny when one begins to consider that the complexity of art practices today far surpasses our available models and formulations of what traditionally might indicate progress. Yet in ceramics, increased technical innovation and virtuosic handling still largely are accepted as signifiers, indicating achievement, progress, and linear movement through time. But we're clearly living at a moment when these parameters tell only part of the story. In this sense, I'm interested in trying to reboot the material, defaulting it back to ground, to dirt. I still believe clay has the possibility to measure and tell us things, But as we begin to discard our overly tidy narratives, the conversation becomes decidedly more complex. But for all these words, I'm still very much just trying to understand what clay is. The most direct way I can do this is to do things with it, to weigh it, to carry it around my coat pocket for a month, to push it into orifices and holes and the gaps of things, to drag a duffel bag full of it around, to take naps with it, to build a 12,000-pound clay slab with it, to do impossible things like make it disappear or try to fire it in a second. Although kind of strange, these actions are clearly nothing new. But as I rattle off this list, what really startles me is what's really strange is how collectively we're almost in near agreement about what we should do with clay, about what constitutes appropriate responses to this material. For the most part, we want and are taught to make things out of it, that is, to make clay represent something, to put it in the shape of something else. Whether we're making another slipcast plumbing thing, or an animal, or a pot, or a figure, or even the skillful representation of a technique itself, we find pleasure in making things out of it and sticking these things into very hot boxes. Although making clay into the shape of reference exists as part of my practice, I always felt kind of estranged from these strategies as wholesale exercises, as if they exist in a self-perpetuating feedback loop that's entirely too closed off for me to enter. Another way I've been trying to figure out this material is by being as inclusive as possible. This might seem counterintuitive to the more orthodox, tried-and-true methodologies that craft-centered, material-specific research has sponsored through the millennia. For me, this strategy has always felt flat. It feels a little kind of theatrical. But as I say this, I fully believe that the challenges of material specificity are at once what makes clay interesting, but would also prevent ceramics from having a meaningful relationship with the larger discourse about art and ideas. For me, in order to have a meaningful relationship with the material in 2007, divorced from mannerism, I need it next to a J1 Promax boombox made in 1986 that sits atop commercial carpet next to fluorescent light that leans on the wreckage from a boat that tried to circumnavigate the Earth in 1968 and failed. I'm curious about what clay has to tell us when it moves outside the logic of its own conventions, when its own invented set of rules. In my own work, perhaps it's more meaningful and more useful to imagine clay and the objects within the project simply as points in a constellation. Together they form a shape, an abstraction larger than themselves, yet separately they still maintain their own discrete measures of value and meaning. I started off saying that my work doesn't live squarely within the world of ceramics and clearly doesn't abide by its established old world norms of material specificity or craft virtuosity. Said, when I look around, some of the things that seem interesting within the field don't have much use for these tropes either. Ceramic practice at its borders, like most of art production, is usually way ahead or way outside of the critical discourse and historical narratives we develop that try to contain and package our practices. Inversely, what generally gets made near ceramic's center seems encrusted and stagnated because of these reductive formulations. Somewhat in spite of itself, a beautiful kind of conceptual incongruence has occurred within the field, with progressive innovation being the byproduct of entrapment. Innovation through entrapment might seem counterintuitive. If one believes they are trapped or caught, there's often an attempt to invent creative solutions to break free. The more rigid the entrapment, the more wild the innovation. In ceramics' case, this entrapment has something maybe to do with the density of its historicity, or perhaps the tiring and ridiculous debate over why ceramics isn't accepted in the art world, or perhaps it's just that being beholden to a single material is a rather odd arrangement given our hyper-plural transmedia obsessions. In either case, what happens on the ground floor in the studio is often wild, chaotic innovation, the kind not tethered to a concurrent language or movement, but wild, unsyncopated doing. Like speaking in tongue, it comes from a place of urgent necessity, but a place that can't be wholly accessed through logic alone. This is a good thing. To me, ceramics feels like a wide open field, in part because no one outside of ceramics is really paying much attention. By simply being left alone, ceramics has mutated and gestated to develop a set of incongruent strategies and standards, an elegantly flat-footed syncopation and an often beautifully awkward aesthetic. But strangely, this innovation has occurred without being tethered to a concurrent revision within the discourse of clay, or for that matter, any discourse that attempts to consider the plurality of its disparate practices. Ceramic artists have mostly been left alone to use and borrow from a stagnantly dysfunctional critical canon, one that often wrongly assumes that ceramists are still involved with trying desperately to make art, or that ceramic practice is primarily rooted through material investigations, or that a clay's object's meaning must be refracted through ceramic art history. This agitating gap between ceramics' available discourse and its actual pervading practice pronounces a problem, but a problem where some of the field's most wild innovation is currently couched. Thanks a lot.